Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 31st, 2013. Feels like I haven't been here for a while, because I haven't, I guess. I'm your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
Our guest co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Thanks for coming, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Tim on the controls.
Hello.
Alyssa and Jenny are away today. Today is the Vita Vegan Con Report Show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So I had the good fortune to be able to attend the second ever Vita Vegan Con conference last weekend in Portland, Oregon. And today's show is dedicated to the experiences had at the conference. I want to bring a bit of the event to you today, especially for those who didn't get to attend. And for those who don't know, Vita Vegan Con is a vegan bloggers conference. And this year's three-day event included presentations and workshops on a myriad of topics relating to veganism and animal rights, but I will get more into those specifics later. As part of the event, I was lucky to attend a presentation by activists Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan of the nonprofit organization Our Hen House on the topic of how and why to expand your message to include animal rights. And our first main segment today is an interview with these remarkable ladies on this subject and how it pertains to us as individuals who want to advocate for the animals. In this interview, they share lots of tips and advice on how to convey your message to those in your social circles. And for our main segment today, I will be presenting an official Vita Vegan Con report, we shall say, sharing some of the highlights of the event and including audio clips from just a small sampling of the weekend's many presentations. We'll have Gina Hamshaw and Ginny Messina speaking on how hot topics in nutrition influence vegan advocacy. There's also Grant Butler, Julie Hassan, and Janessa Philemon-Kirp speaking on vegan professionals in a non-vegan world, and Erica Larson presenting on veganism and social justice issues. These are all activists in our community, and they were all brought together last weekend in Portland to share their wisdom with the conference attendees. There is so much to share with you and definitely not enough time. We will get started now.
Yeah, so I've recently become more aware of the fact that many vegans often are feeling isolated or perhaps like they don't fit in or connect with people in their communities because of their differences of ethics, beliefs, and awareness of the issues. I know personally when I first transitioned to veganism, I didn't know any other vegans or animal rights people aside from my partner Ashley, who was also making the changes at the same time. In the beginning, I became a little involved in a few animal rights groups and things, but I was all new to this, I felt like perhaps I wasn't vegan enough. I know that sounds weird, but you know when you're first, you don't know all the issues as thoroughly as everyone else seems to. So I didn't feel like I quite fit in with those groups either, and I didn't. And on the contrast, I also had a hard time being surrounded by people that ate meat, wore leather, and appeared to have little regard for what they were contributing to. So I'm just wondering what your other experiences are, guys.
Well, you're talking about how you feel the feeling of isolation mm-hmm. for people who choose to live the vegan lifestyle, and
yes.
that is to do the least harm to all living creatures,
absolutely.
Which is what I say is what my life's motto is. I feel isolated quite a bit when I'm basically around anyone who doesn't share my life philosophy and act upon it in their daily lives. So that would be all the non-vegans out there. I think, like, I just feel like I'm a weirdo anyways, but I think sort of like it's all encompassed by my life's ethics and my life's values, which is veganism. So I do feel that it's interesting because here in Vancouver, we're very lucky to have such a large animal rights and vegan community, and there's the online community as well. And even like just we have the Facebook group, Vancouver mm-hmm. Vegans, and there's actually, we're always chatting on there, and Jackie and Alyssa and Tim. I haven't seen you much on there, Cynthia, I don't think at all.
I read it every day.
Yeah, but actually, pretty much all of us here are very active on there, but it's just like, whatever. Like, we're all friends and we know each other, and that's the thing, is like, you get to know people, mm-hmm. and I find someone, I think, asked me recently or some time ago about my friends, and do you feel, I guess it was, the question was like, do you like, how, what is the interaction with your friends towards your veganism? Like, well, all my friends are vegan, yeah. I guess. So I think I'm pretty lucky, if you want to say that, to put myself in this bubble. But then, but then when you prick that bubble and you get out of your safe little circle there and your safe little environment, like say work functions, and you're forced to eat a meal with your coworkers that are eating dead animals, and it's sort of a culture shock to me.
So. Well, and I think part of that too is like, it's still important to keep connected with people that aren't vegans, because otherwise how do we spread the message, right? So I guess if you are feeling entirely isolated, maybe you're in a town where there's not really a community for animal rights or vegan people, maybe you could just, you know, share the message, obviously extremely compassionately, with your fellow friends and people that are supportive of you, and maybe just, maybe you'll have a few, I don't really like to use the word, but converts, you know. You never know what happens when you share the message. It's hard for people to not think about that, I think.
Well, in our interview today, for people who are interested in this, you'll learn how to share that message. Mm-hmm. That's what the interview is all about, is sharing the message in your social circles to those who don't know the message yet.
But I think the thing is also with these online communities, it's like great to have the support if you don't have the support in your daily life. But I think there is really the danger that it is kind of a bubble. And if you only are around in these communities and you're like, yeah, everybody thinks like me, and then you realize that actually they don't. Yeah. So I think, I agree. It's really, really important to go outside. And also, even though if we all have strong beliefs, to not like be judgmental towards people who don't have these beliefs, I think that's really important. I know for myself, while I was like 100% vegetarian and was at the time also, like, I was that for the longest part of my life, and was kind of thinking, vegans are kind of strange people, and I think a lot of that came from people being like very hostile, or like vegans being very hostile to everybody who's not vegan. So I think it's really important to see all sides of the story there.
I think it's extremely unfortunate that that's the way a lot of society does view us, because I would say on the majority of vegans, animal rights people aren't as, I guess, angry or judgmental as people see us as. And so obviously, like, when you say, oh, I'm vegan, a lot of people have a negative thought.
Yeah. The worst of everyone is always going to stand out as a stereotype. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Especially when I say I'm an animal activist and I'm a yoga teacher, and they're always like, what? How can
contrast,
you be both?
Yeah.
I'm like,
how
I'm
can you be both? They go hand in hand.
Totally. Because of my yoga, I'm an animal activist, and I come from always a peaceful place, and I do have friends who are non-vegan, and I've just seen how, just coming from a place of compassion, I've impacted them, because, you know, they'll send me messages when they're like, I ate completely vegan yesterday, or, you know, I'm juicing, or all these types of things. So I think it's really important to connect to the non-vegan community as well, because that's part of our activism, is to convert, I say that in quotations, people.
Yeah, this is all really relevant to actually a few of the segments that we're sharing today. There's also a segment coming up later on people, vegan professionals, like us in a non-vegan world. And Jackie, I know you have some experience to share with that, but I think we should talk about that at another time, because it comes up from time to time. Jackie works in an animal environment where there are live animals and dead animals.
It's not a slaughterhouse. It's it's a vet hospital.
It sounds like a slaughterhouse.
It's the people who are eating them who bring them to work. But anyways, I guess we'll save that for another time.
This is your big chance, so don't blow it. We're here to present the cutting-edge radio you want to hear. What about a program featuring just local Vancouver bands?
No market for that.
We have an expert on gospel music.
No.
Our public affairs programs dig deep with voices other stations won't touch.
No.
Programs with First Nations hosts?
Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM.
The switch is on.
Coming up for you. So the chicken vigils will continue every Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. and that's outside the slaughterhouse on Commercial and Hastings. And also, along with Liberation BC's chicken vigils this Wednesday from 6 to 9 p.m. at Britannia Secondary School, or Elementary School, I believe it is, there will be a volunteer night for Liberation BC where we will be making posters and other similar chicken-related items for the vigils. And also the following day, that would be the Thursday next week.
What dates are these?
Oh, sorry, that's this Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, you mean?
Coming Wednesday, yes.
But what's the date?
That would be June 6th, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, June 5th, actually.
Oh, June 5th. Okay. So June 6th would be where the dairy... event will be as well, the Dairy Volunteer Night, where they will be planning for Liberation BC. So that will be, sorry, I'm just looking up here, having a bit of technical difficulties here. So it's Dairy Project Monthly Meeting, and that will be June 6th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And so that is a Liberation BC project focused on the Canadian dairy industry. So Liberation BC will be doing research on the dairy industry and discussing potential areas of focus for this project. So come join for vegan snacks, discussion, and brainstorming. And that will take place at Nice Shoes in Vancouver, which is the Vancouver Shoe Store.
And the only Vancouver shoe store
Exactly, absolutely. And on Meatless Monday, which is June 10th, so...
Vancouver.
Exactly, in Vancouver. From 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m., there will be leafleting, again with Liberation BC. They're up to a lot of things lately. So the Vancouver City Council has chosen June 10th as Meatless Monday. This is a great opportunity to do some outreach and let everybody know how terrible animal products are for the environment. If you'd like to help out and need more information, please contact Roger at liberationbc.org. And this will take place at the City Center Canada Line Station, which is at Granville in Georgia. And another exciting animal-friendly as well as environmental event coming up is Car Free Day on June 16th. I'm not sure, have any of you guys gone to that before?
Well, definitely.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We had our very first Vancouver Veg Fest was at the Car Free Festival a few years ago. Wasn't it last year too? But Animal Voices was there 2 years ago on Main Street.
Yeah.
And then last year, I don't know if that was part of the Car Free Festival or not, because I was out of town then. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, no, Veg Fest was originally part of Car Free Day, but now they're two separate events. But Car Free Day is happening again in Vancouver, and a lot of animal rights groups will be there, including... I know of for sure Liberation BC and Fur Bearer Defenders will be there, and they are looking for volunteers as well and your support. So please check out furbearerdefenders.com and liberationbc.org to help out with the event. And it will take place from noon to 7 p.m. on the streets of Commercial Drive, Main Street, and I believe there's some Kitsilano and West End locations as well, but I'm not sure of the exact streets. And for more information on this event, please go to carfreevancouver.com. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have listed on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks so much for that, Jackie. Mm-hmm. So we have one official interview on today's show, and that is with Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan, the two women behind the nonprofit organization called Our Hen House, which was nominated for a prestigious Webby Award this year. Our Hen House is a multimedia hive of opportunities for animal advocates and produces resources that you can use in order to find your way to create change for animals. Both Jasmine and Marianne hold an enormous wealth of knowledge when it comes to advocating for the animals. And during the Vita Vegan Conference last weekend, I was able to speak with them in person on the topic of how and why to expand your message as an individual activist to include animal rights. Here is that interview. So we're talking about vegan activism and how to go about it within your social networks and just like your contacts that you have in everyday life and people that you see in person during the day. And just as people who care about animals,
including animal rights in your message to them without alienating them. So in your talk, you talked about why to do so first. So let's start with that. Why would you want to include animal rights just in your daily messages of activism with people?
Well, of course, there's the story of what's going on factory farms, which is just a horror. And I think anybody who's aware of it really wants to end it. And what we're doing to animals is a terrible thing. So we have to think of how we can approach that and how we can approach it gently. And I think there are some important things to remember in reaching out to people about this important message of the dignity of, and beauty of each animal. And one is that this is not rocket science. You don't have to know a lot of philosophy. You don't have to even know that much of what's going on. You should familiarize yourself with the basics of factory farming. But it's awful. We all know it's awful. You don't have to know that much. This is not hard. All you have to know is the fact that animals matter. The animals that we eat for food are living, breathing, thinking, emotional creatures who love their lives if they're allowed to lead them. And that's as complicated as it gets. And the other thing that you have to remember is that individuals are the vanguard of this movement. Animal rights organizations are doing a great job of going undercover on factory farms and getting the truth and messaging out there. But only people who really, really already know and care are going to go to those animal rights organizations. It's everyday people who are reaching out to people who don't know yet what's going on, who are really making the big change here and who are introducing people to this issue. So your position as an animal activist, no matter what you're doing in life, is not on the sidelines. It's right at the center of this movement.
So in your talk the other day, you gave some tips on how you can incorporate just individual activism among your contacts, among people who you're interacting with online and in person. Perhaps you'd like to go over some of those. I think, Marianne, one point that you made was to assume that everyone already knows what's going on. Can you maybe expand on that?
Yeah, I think that everyone finds this a difficult topic to broach, and a lot of people really are very naive about what's going on factory farms. They don't know how awful it is, and they don't know how brutal it is, and they don't know the numbers either, that it's so many animals. Here in the United States, it's 1 million animals are killed for food every hour, around the clock, every single day. That's 286 per second. So this problem is enormous, but surprisingly, people can be very naive about it, but you don't want to bury them in information. You don't want to just go up to somebody and start giving them information that they haven't asked for. That's never going to work. So one way I go about it is just sort of to gently assume they already know and mention just casually that I'm so glad I don't eat eggs so that I don't have to think about and worry about battery cages anymore. And I assume they know about battery cages. Maybe they don't, and maybe they won't go find out. But the ones who are interested will go find out. There's plenty of places they can get this information. We don't have to bury them in it. What we have to do is to pique their curiosity, to make them wonder. And the people who are responsible, the people who are caring, they will start to worry about it. And they'll go and find out the really tough stuff for themselves at a pace that they can manage. We don't have to do that for them.
So I want to know, why do you think it's important to engage in online activism? And Jasmine, perhaps you can answer this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think online activism is just such a great way of reaching people who might be considered, you know, low-hanging fruit, let's say. We all spend so much time on our various social networks. We all spend so much time also reading things on the internet these days. It's even way more different than it was just a few years ago. So even if you're writing a blog and you're incorporating animal advocacy into that in a way that suits you and your lifestyle and your social circles and your talents and things that you're excited about. So if you're into food, you might start talking about vegan cupcakes and maybe tying in the fact that this can actually be, I like to say, a political statement with icing. And you could have a recipe that is devoted specifically to an animal that you love, like an animal who you met at a sanctuary, for example. Or if you're not lucky enough to have a sanctuary near you, you might even just go to the website of a animal sanctuary and learn about one of the animal stories. You might even do the same thing for a dog and cat shelter in your area. The stories of individual animals is so powerful. So that's one way you could do it. Of course, Facebook and Twitter provides a lot of opportunities too. I do encourage people to not make that all they do, because I think sometimes we can convince ourselves that we are maybe doing a little bit more than we actually are just by like clicking like or something like that. So I like to encourage people to do things like write letters to the editor, which is online advocacy, but also that shows up in the op-ed section or in the letter to the editor section of your local paper, which by the way, is the most read section of the paper aside from the front page. There's so many different ways of inserting our voices for the animals.
Yeah, the other day you were talking about making videos, and it brought me to remember that when I was at an animal sanctuary last year near Washington, D.C., I happened to take a video of my friend who went to hold a rooster, and he was so comfortable in that spot of being held in her arms that he immediately fell asleep and started snoring. So I have this video of this snoring rooster. Unfortunately, to this day, it only has 60 views. I checked it the other day. Maybe you can repost that for me. So, yeah, you spoke about that, telling sanctuary stories and telling vegan transformation stories. So maybe you can speak a bit on that and the power of telling personal stories.
Well, regardless of whether you're a vegan who's listening to this or you're somebody who just cares about animals and maybe you are challenging yourself to eat more vegan than maybe you used to eat, we can all identify with the stories of people who changed their life in order to expand their worldview so that their lifestyle choices of how they eat more properly represented the way that they believe the world should be. So when people learn about others who go vegan, it can be a really deeply powerful experience. I know for me, and I'm sure for you, Allison, when we're sitting around with a group of vegans, surely this is going to come up. How did you go vegan? That always comes up. By featuring things like that on our online networks or even just bringing them up in mixed company, if you don't have a blog yourself, this could be really powerful. So many people I know have really amazing vegan stories, you know, like someone who works with our hen house went vegan because she owns a candy company and somebody emailed her and said, hey, is your candy vegan? And she was like, vegan? I have no idea. So she did the research and she found out that it is vegan, thankfully. But in the process of doing the research, she herself went vegan. She created a vegan landing page for her company. And now she's working with our hen house and she's such a great activist. These are the kinds of stories that empower people.
So speaking about empowering people, that brings me to my next question. You spoke about this in your talk the other day. It's empowering people to change the world. I think one example you gave on how to do this is to feed them good food, show them good food. Let's talk about that, food activism.
People think that food is separate from activism. I think that food is activism when it's vegan food. We are never going to change the world, absolutely never, unless we can get people delicious vegan food. Maybe a few people will change their ways, but people need to eat and people love to eat and they have to understand that delicious food is entirely possible and that they really don't have to sacrifice. In fact, most of us have found that our culinary experiences have dramatically expanded since we've gone vegan. So bringing that message to people is incredibly important, and you don't bring that message to people by telling them about the food. You bring that message to them by feeding them the food. And this is so easy to do for all of us that there are so many opportunities that we can use to bring food to people. One obvious one is the office. Most of us work in offices, and most of the people in those offices are not vegan. Some of them have never heard of veganism. Many of them might be eating a very standard American diet, and which is full of bad food and not particularly interesting. And just bringing in some vegan cupcakes and introducing them to the fact that such a thing can exist and that there is a possibility of leaving animals out of their diet can be extraordinarily empowering. Sometimes if you have if you anticipate a lot of a resistance, you might not want to tell them it's vegan until after they've eaten it because some people, you know, will be so resistant, they'll be horrified at the idea that a cupcake could be vegan. But don't, whatever you do, don't make them food and not tell them it's vegan, because what we really want to do is not just feed them, but introduce them to the wonders of vegan food.
And at some point, you might also want to leave out a recipe brochure, a vegan recipe brochure, or the recipe for the thing that they're trying, and maybe eventually a why vegan brochure. Just always push the envelope. That's what we like to do.
Yeah, my sister, who's actually sitting right here, is a very introverted vegan. She actually goes to her work, and she's not much of a cook. She brings little cubes of Daya cheese and crackers. Cool. And
I cooked scrambled tofu and they really liked it.
Awesome. So that brings me to my next question is,
social anxiety on speaking out. Not everyone is comfortable with speaking out and relaying their message for the animals. How do people do that? How do you get over any social anxieties you might have?
Well, the essence of our hen house is really that there is a way to broach these subjects no matter who we are, no matter if we are introverted or extroverted. Marianne is introverted. Marianne defines introverted, and I'm you know, much more of an extrovert than she is. And we all have our different ways. So if we're artists, we can paint about it. We can do theater about it. We can make poetry about it. We could speak up through our art form about it. And art is a really powerful way of reaching people with the animal message. If you're a lawyer, you could take on pro bono cases, or you could handle nonprofits who might be animal rights nonprofits who need a little bit of help in that area. If you are a teacher, you could start to do humane education. There's literally a way in for everybody. We don't have to have a bullhorn and, you know, and be at a protest in order to be making a difference. Though that is great too, if that's what calls to you. Activism, we can't, at our hen house, we cast a wide net over what we mean by activism. As Marianne was saying, food is activism. We don't have to be giving workshops. We could. We could do so many different things. So I like to say, start with where you are. What do you like to do? How can you incorporate that into a way to change the world for animals? And I think that at our hen house, we provide a lot of resources for people to start to connect the dots in that way.
Absolutely. You have to start with where you are. You have to start with the personality you have, and every personality is capable of doing this. Some people have more anxiety about it. Some people are very afraid of being disapproved of and anticipate disapproval, but you can start in very gentle ways. One way is just to occasionally tweet a story. Online activism is perfect for the introvert because introverts are the smartest people, of course. We all know that. And they can create wonderful posts, and they can do wonderful things online. And they don't have to, like, you know, talk to people, which is just annoying so often. So think of all the wonderful things you can do, and you can do it at your own pace. If you're afraid of getting too much pushback, just do something gentle. Do one of those sanctuary stories. See how people respond, and you can take it step by step. The one thing you can't do is to not do it at all. The animals just can't wait for us to all get over our social anxiety or to confront other issues. This is a crisis of monumental proportions that is going on right now. The suffering is so enormous that we have to, like, push ourselves. And what we want to do is find ways to push ourselves in which we will be comfortable and we will be effective, because that's the best way to make change.
And I loved what you said the other day, Marianne. You said you ended with, whatever you do, just do it. The animals can't wait for us not to do it. So to just close here, I'd love to know, please tell us what our listeners can find at our hen house, Tools for Creating Change for the Animals.
Well, thank you. Our Hen House is an online magazine, and you can find it at ourhenhouse.org. And every day we publish a different article with an idea or opportunity for changing the world for animals. We have columns, we have reviews, we have feature articles. We have a This Animal on This Day section where you could upload a photo of an animal in your life. We have a breaking news ticker that has breaking news from the world of animal rights. We have a lot. And we also have a weekly podcast, and we admire your podcast so much. So it's funny to be on this end of the mic, but people can find us on iTunes. Look for the Our Hen House podcast or an ourhenhouse.org. We have a lot of fun. We do. Do we have fun?
Yeah, we have loads of fun.
We do.
Yeah, definitely. Your podcast is one of the ones that, it's my favorite podcast, I'd have to say. And I definitely tune in every week, every Saturday morning. I look forward to that. So definitely, I just encourage our listeners to check out Our Hen House, the podcast, and all the other material that they have there, ourhenhouse.org. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for what you do. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's exciting to be sitting here live and in person.
Yeah, we are great admirers of what you're doing, and I'm so excited that we had a chance to meet in person.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I'm going to go through the news now. So, two more beluga whale deaths at Marineland. So this happens after Marineland has been in the news. We had Marineland on a couple weeks, not Marineland, the group against right. Marineland on a couple weeks ago. And so this adds to three beluga whales that were killed last year. So the two whales that have recently been or have died. And the funny part is Marineland hasn't released any statements about this. So they've just noticed that there used to be 41 whales and now there are 39. So 3-year-old Charlotte and 1-year-old Luna are missing. And so this brings, I know it's insane, this brings Marineland's beluga death whale to 20 whales in just 14 years. And between 2009 and 2012, at least one white whale has died in the park every year. Sorry, did you want to say?
Yeah, that just really says something. Now, this story broke this week, I think just yesterday or something, but this actually happened in the fall, but I think they were keeping it under wraps, right? They didn't really want people to know until necessary.
They still haven't released anything about it.
They're just missing. They're just gone.
Yeah, they're just gone. It's just that it was reported on a database that reports all the beluga whales that are in captivity.
And someone noticed that and reported on it to the media.
Yeah, and so they still haven't released what's happened. And just to let you know, beluga whales can live up to 50 or 60 years, and most of the beluga whales that have died at Marineland have died at a very young age. So that's
for sure.
Very sad news coming from Marineland again. And also, the historic high, the seal hunt quota was set. The quota was set actually after the seal hunt has almost ended, but it's insane. The quota is 408,000 seals. That can be killed. 90,000 were killed this year as the seal hunt is coming to a close.
The Canadian seal hunt?
The Canadian seal hunt, yes. And earlier this year, Taiwan passed a historic ban on the trade, including for Canadian seal products. And before, the European Union, Russia, and the United States and other nations have also implemented prohibitions on the trade seal hunt. So the market is low, yet they continue to kill these seals. And so it's quite sad. And so there's been pressure on the Canadian government, but we also, you know, need to keep up that fight. A lot of people don't even still know that the seal hunt still goes on. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Canadian government is very pro seal hunt, and we've done interviews on this issue before. We didn't this year, but we have covered it last year and the year before. Mm-hmm. So if people really want to find out more, we did an excellent interview last year with Rebecca Aldworth from HSI, I believe she works for, and she just really brought some really interesting information that's not always out there at the forefront of the media, actually. So
I think what's really important is to know that it's not only about the seals, but it has all further going effects. Like, most westernized countries have banned cat and dog fur trim, and the reason Canada hasn't is because they want to sell the seals to China and therefore don't ban the Chinese cat and dog fur.
That's
so
right.
It all has like further going effects than we might see at the
it's
first
all so
point.
Connected. It's crazy.
It's crazy. So I'm going to go into some happy news now. In India, dolphins have gained unprecedented protection. India has officially recognized dolphins as non-human persons whose rights to life and liberty must be respected. Dolphin parks that were built across the country will be shut down. And And India's Ministry of Environment and Forests have advised state governments to ban all dolphinariums and other commercial entertainment that involves the capture and confinement of dolphins. And this includes orcas and bottlenose dolphins as well.
I think this is amazing. I think that India is really a leader in some ways regarding animal protection that so many other countries are not. And it's actually written in their constitution section to protect the animals, even though they don't protect all animals. But I think they're still to be applauded for this magnificent move for the dolphins.
Definitely. And also, so now coming back to Canadian news, I just wanted to mention this one. A cougar was killed in Coquitlam after a woman said that the cougar lunged at her from a window. And so in the last, I think it was a week or a few weeks, 4 cougars have been killed. And so the fur bear defenders are urging people to remind them to put away attractants. So clean their barbecue, don't leave pet food outside, keep garbages closed, pick up fallen fruit to deter the cougars. So instead of, you know, displacing them, they're just killing them.
And the wildlife services?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
So it's horrible. So, you know, if you live in these areas that you have cougars, then you can do your part by, you know, getting rid of the deterrence. And also, a bear was killed by the West Coast Express train. It's so sad. And so that happened also in that area. And then one more bear was shot in the Yukon. It was not a spirit bear, but it was an unofficial spirit bear. And so their group now, the First Nations in that area, is trying to ban roadside hunting because this bear was just on the side of the road and was just shot from the side of the road, because apparently you're allowed to kill bears if they're not on the road. If they're on the side of the road, then they're fair game, which is horrible.
Thank you so much for the news, Cynthia. No, so this brings us to my review of last weekend's Vida Vegan Con conference with a selection of audio clips to share. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Vida Vegan Con is a vegan bloggers conference. This was only the second one to ever occur, and the last one was 2 years ago. This weekend's activities attracted a few hundred attendees from all over the United States, Canada, and even as far as the UK. We all went to Portland to converge together to spend 3 whole days under the same roof, talking and eating all things vegan and learning a plethora of skills to take us to the next levels and where we want to be with our various blogs on vegan advocacy. What drew us together, I think, was the one common goal of sharing the vegan lifestyle with the world via our online presence. And I would say that a common thread among us all was that we are doing this basically, you know, for the good of humanity, because we want to share the benefits of a vegan lifestyle with others because we are so passionate about it for our various reasons. But I think a significant reason that drives us is for the good of the animals. I do have a personal blog myself, in case you're wondering, AllisonCole.net. And then there's our Animal Voices website, which is a blog, animalvoices.org. And I am passionate about communicating to others on issues that affect the world via my writing and my voice, which you're listening to right now. So when I saw the array of impressive topics that were going to be presented at this conference back in January, I knew that I just had to be there. It was not an option for me not to go, so I made it happen. There were lots of presentations on all forms of vegan food blogging, from photography skills to the art of creating recipes to writing cookbook reviews to using social media, and there were topics that branched out more into the issues that we discuss in our blogs and even on the radio show here, such as compassionate parenting, body image acceptance and veganism, the ethics behind veganism, and spirituality in veganism. And that's just a small glimpse. You can check out the conference website at vidavegancon.com to see the whole agenda lineup there. There's also a link on our website, animalvoices.org. I counted the number of time slots for the sessions during the weekend, and there were 13 in total, which means that I attended 13 talks during the packed 3-day event. And in each time slot for the day, there were usually 3 to 4 options of different presentations that you could attend. And boy, was it ever hard to choose for many of them, because I wanted to go to everything. And luckily for me, my sister tagged along with me on the whole trip, and she graciously attended some separate sessions to record them for me, so now I get to listen to them on my computer. If you're a follower of many of the popular vegan blog websites, well, many of the people behind these sites were also at the conference, plus lots of vegan cookbook authors as well, who also do a lot of blogging. There was Hannah Kaminsky, who you may know from the review of her vegan desserts book that I did some time ago on the show, plus her popular Bittersweet blog. Drina Burton was there, one of my favorite cookbook authors, and we had her on the show last year to talk about compassionate parenting. I was happy to meet people like longtime cookbook author Nava Atlas, who we had on the show 2 years ago for our annual Christmas show, and she was really just so nice. And newspaper columnist Grant Butler was there as well, who we featured in an activist profile this year on our New Year's show. I could really do more name dropping, but I'll stop in the interest of time. So it was really cool just to see and meet in person and get advice from all these people who you would know from their online activism already, but hadn't necessarily shook hands with literally before last weekend. And apart from the top-level speakers and presentations that made up the bulk of the conference event, I must mention the general organization of the conference, which must be duly praised. There were so many delightful extras that were added into the event that really rose its level from merely fantastic to that of just super fantastic. So many details were taken care of, and so many bonuses were added to even further raise the value of the event. And I could really just go on and on about this. I think I'm going to actually do an extended blog post on my blog, just because we don't have a lot of time here. But wow, there's like a lot of food, a lot of free stuff, a lot of fun, a lot of social activities. So I want to share 3 audio clips with you of a cross-section of 3 of the presentations that I think you'll find relevant in our quest to speak up for the animals. The first one is from the presentation entitled How Hot Topics in Nutrition Influence Vegan Advocacy. In this clip, Gina Hamshaw from ChoosingRaw.com and vegan dietitian Ginny Messina of TheVeganRD.com speak about incorporating animal rights messages into their vegan nutrition-based blogs.
Is that our ultimate goal with what we're doing, trying to get people to go vegan? And if yes, how do we come from a place of scientific integrity when it's no secret that we're pushing an agenda?
Yes, the answer is yes. I want people to think for themselves and make their own choices. You know, I certainly don't want to just order someone to go vegan. I want to show them good reasons why that's a great idea, and I want them to feel compelled to do it themselves. That's the only way these major seismic life changes stick, right? It's like when we really are invested in it. So that is absolutely my goal. I think the thing that I struggle with is many of the people on my blog who are thinking about going vegan are those who are thinking about it exclusively from the health angle. And it does tend to be a lot of people a little bit like me who very easily get dazzled by bad diets, extreme diets. And so what I do feel a sense of obligation to show them a healthy way to be vegan. And by healthy, I mean not restrictive, I mean abundant, I mean balanced and nourishing. I try to meet people where they are, and I think if someone comes to my blog hoping to improve his or her health, I want to help them get there. I don't want to say, well, I don't care about your health. I really just want to talk to you about animals. But what I do try to do is always slip a compassionate message into everything I talk about. So as often as I can, whether I'm just writing about some tasty recipe or some health question, I will try to mention animals. I'll find a way to do that. And I found that the most effective way to bring animal rights messaging onto my blog while also keeping people engaged if they're interested mostly in health is to just tell my story, because I too was someone who was mostly interested in health. And it hasn't stayed that way, although, I mean, I'm still interested in health. I want to be a doctor. But I'm interested in a lot of other things, including animal rights and social justice. So I think when people see my story and they see that I'm someone a whole lot like them, and then I tell them that I realized at some point along the way that the world was much bigger than me and my health concerns, it does inspire them to think a little bit outside of their health goals. But their health goals are not all that there is. And so I think just using the I voice a lot for me has worked. Showing people that I stepped outside the box of my own thinking has been very helpful so far.
It's a little bit different for me, I think, because I am not trying to talk people into going vegan for their health. As I said in my introductory comments, I think that most of my audience already is vegan. And somebody left a comment on my blog the other day that said that I preach to the converted. But that's not exactly true, because my message is that, or my goal is that I want vegans to be healthy. We need people who are helping people to go vegan, who are doing persuasive kind of work and moving people towards a vegan diet. And there are so many wonderful organizations that are doing that, you know, Vegan Outreach and Mercy for Animals. I see myself as having a different role. I have a different niche. And mine is to give vegans good, solid, evidence-based information that will help them stay healthy as vegans. So that allows me to be 100% transparent about my bias. I'm an animal rights activist. I'm an animal advocate. It's the only reason I do this work. And so I can say that because I'm not saying to anybody, oh, you have to be vegan or you'll never be healthy. That's my message. My message is veganism is a moral imperative, and you need to do it right so that you'll stay healthy and take care of yourself, first of all. That's an obligation, and we all want all of our fellow vegans to be healthy. And also, we want a perfect image for the vegan community. And when I say that, I don't mean that everyone can be perfectly healthy, but we can all avoid things like vitamin B12 deficiencies and vitamin D deficiencies. We can do that. It's easy to do that as long as we have the right information.
For our second clip, I attended an interesting panel entitled Vegan Professionals in a Non-Vegan World, presented by Grant Butler, who we had on the show before, Frank Costigan, Julie Hassan, and Janessa Philemon-Kerp. They all work in different aspects of the vegan food industry, from newspaper columnists to cookbook authors and cooks to restaurant manager, but are surrounded by non-vegans who just might not always understand where they are coming from, just like our discussion at the beginning of the show. So in this clip, they discuss discuss how they approach this. And on an interesting side note, I've included a part of the talk where Grant Butler makes reference to me having interviewed him earlier this year and how that affected him in thinking of himself as a food activist.
It is exciting, and I think that I love it. I feel like we are just in this, we have this amazing opportunity to open people's minds in a really positive way and share really good food, because food brings people together. And even if you don't work within the food industry, I mean, you probably bring your lunch or you go out to dinner with other people, and it's this opportunity to introduce people to something that they might not be familiar with, you know, in a really positive way.
Yeah, like you were saying with, you know, with your articles that you write, that you're introducing so many people. If you wrote for a vegan publication, they'd be like, oh, that's a great soy curls recipe. Mm-hmm. But you're introducing it to a whole new variety.
Well, and it's funny, you used the word activism. And I was interviewed for a radio program earlier this year, at the beginning of the year.
By me?
And they were... By you? Yeah. I was asked about, you know, my work as a vegan activist. And, you know, I thought about it, and we talked, and afterwards, I thought, you know, I'm a journalist. We've been over backwards not to be seen as activists, but just the mere fact of writing about, you know, about vegan food in a mainstream publication is a form of activism. And I really kind of felt empowered by that and start to think about what I do in a different way, where I'm not really writing about overtly about food politics, but kind of indirectly, I am, just because I'm putting it out there as this viable option for people to consider. And thank you for putting that in my head, because that really was not something that I thought about at all. I hope that the top editors don't start thinking of me as an activist. Hey, dial it back, you know. But right now they're really liking what I'm doing.
It's like a quiet activism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that you can do just living your life. You know, just championing that. I'm sure that, you know, if you work in a field with, you know, like pet rescue or in veterinarian, does anybody here do that? I think it would be really hard to work with somebody who cares for animals so much, who is an omnivore. I think something like that would be also really hard to do, but really interesting.
There is so much work to be done. Like, this is just the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think this is where the sort of the tide is changing and people are becoming more open to it, out of necessity, out of, you know, because of allergies, because of whatever it is. This is really our opportunity to start educating people in a really positive way.
So we're all saying that we are choosing, we're vegans and we're working in non-vegan communities, but what about the people who are vegan and are uncomfortable or unwilling to, for whatever their reason, uncomfortable to be in this community, in the larger world? There's room for everyone, I think.
There is, but you have to be really secure, I think, in who you are and the decisions you make, because it's really easy to feel kind of bullied or uncomfortable around, you know, because people, they'll instantly try to do that to you if they can. At least I find that sometimes there'll always be the people that will, you know, take you on as a fight, like you're trying to pick a fight with them or something by the choices that you're making. And then I think you really need to come from a place of being very secure with your choices.
And for our final clip, it comes from Erica Larson of the blog Sows Before Bros. In a presentation on veganism and social justice, veganism intersects and overlaps with so many different social justice issues. And she talks about how we must recognize these intersections in our advocacy for the animals.
Food is an emotionally and politically charged issue. It's hard to think of any element necessary to human survival as fraught with meaning and currency as that of obtaining, preparing, and eating food. And whether we like it or not, we as vegans are making an enormous political statement via our diet, one that, as we all know, can be interpreted very differently by different people. As the politics of food are interwoven with all aspects of life on this planet, we as vegans inevitably find ourselves in stories like the ones truncated in your handout. However, like these stories, our perspective as vegans is just one facet of the whole story. And our goal in moving veganism forward is to inspect the other facets of these stories. Despite the unavoidable reality that our ethical choices are inevitably political ones, there are a distressing number of those who would use the cause of ethical veganism or vegetarianism as an imperative to say and do things that insult, demean, or exclude other vegans, future vegans, and vegan allies. Again, referring to the handout. It's our imperative as vegan activists to be cognizant of intersectionalities between our movement and other social justice movements, and to check that kind of exclusionist thinking in our own community through constructive and mature dialogue. But why? Even though we've embraced a lifestyle that, through its political nature, often thrusts us into situations with various minority or so-called outlier communities, why is it our responsibility to validate or connect with those other communities? And in my personal opinion, there are two very simple reasons, and they're the same two reasons why many of us went vegan in the first place. Firstly, the ethical belief that it is the right thing to do, and secondly, the strategic belief that it is the most sensible thing to do. So speaking ethically, it's my personal firm belief that the fundamental conceit behind most forms of oppression is the institutionalized belief that an aspect or attribute of one form of life is inherently superior to that of another, be that aspect gender, race, sexuality, money, or species. Therefore, it is our moral imperative as able and ethical people to say no to that conceit and to challenge it at every opportunity. As vegans, we can recognize the ethical approach. Many of us are here today because we examined our own ethics and adjusted our lifestyles accordingly. As vegans, we recognize the dignity and autonomy of sentient life, and this includes our fellow humans. But in addition to just plain being the right thing to do, integrating veganism with social justice movements is a winning strategy. The best that a movement in complete isolation can hope to achieve is to sustain itself. When movements are open to all, including and especially allies, we can be more successful together. And a really great example is Betty Friedan. She's known for being instrumental in kickstarting third wave feminism, but she's unfortunately also known for being dismissive of or downright hostile to queer women, working class women, and women of color. Third wave feminism could not grow, develop, or affect real change in society until it was propelled by a true spectrum of women and male allies. Similarly, veganism can only go so far if we insinuate that all other struggles are secondary to those which our ethics have deemed important to us. Unlike other movements, veganism has an unusual advantage in that our allies have the opportunity to actively join us by adopting an ethical diet and compassionate lifestyle, which is why it's that much more important that we are good ambassadors of veganism. And as I'm sure we all know by now, we are de facto ambassadors of veganism to most of the omnivores who meet us, whether we like it or not. If we act our ethics, and our ethics, remember, are compassion, we will demonstrate that veganism is a natural extension of the social justice that our allies and ourselves seek. If, however, we make derogatory statements or take actions with which other and alienate those around us, we paint all of veganism in a negative light. You may not personally espouse all the beliefs that each of your allies do, and that's okay. Just as there are many reasons to be vegan, there are many reasons to join or support another movement. As long as you find the one that works for you, then the only thing that matters is your consideration and your support. You may also make mistakes, although you may never say something like our bad vegan ambassadors, like Morrissey here. You may make a faux pas and unknowingly insult an ally, and that's okay too. Just like veganism, being an ally is a journey, it's not a destination. What's important is that you apologize and you learn from your mistakes, and you move on. Being an ally is not just about giving support. It's about acknowledging that you are there to learn from others and showing humility accordingly. Ultimately, when in doubt, you can always ask yourself, is this helping the animals? It's kind of a vegan joke, I know, and it's a bit of a corny stereotype, but it's a pretty good way to gauge whether you're taking yourself too seriously and whether your open-mindedness can spark an interest in veganism in your new friends.
Wow, that sounds really like an awesome conference. I wish I would have been there, and I definitely want to go next year. One thing I found interesting with these clips was really the aspect of like just being vegan in a non-vegan world, that alone is part of activism. And I think I just want to do a shout out to Stephen Hui, who is a journalist here in Vancouver and who writes for the Georgia Strait. And he just puts the vegan issues there regularly on the vision of non-vegan readers. And I think that's really, really important to be in mainstream media and do other things. And he also has his own blog, vegcoast.com, which is pretty great, but I think that speaks more to vegan. But just being in mainstream media is really, really important.
Yeah, and I just wanted to point out, too, that this conference would be, it was appropriate even for non-bloggers. My sister's not a blogger, and I asked her, I said, is this relevant to you? She said, yeah, definitely. There's really interesting topics that are being discussed here, and I'm very interested in them all. And she liked all the free food, too. She actually texted me last night and said, you know, for the cost of the conference, which is $280, and all the free stuff that we got and all that food, it was actually a really good deal. Like, no kidding. Like, it really was.
Did you finally get to try those mystical Daya new products in the room?
I have some. I was actually going to bring some. God. I might bring them next week because I already got, I brought you guys, by the way, I brought everyone donuts and pizza today.
Delicious.
So you're welcome.
Thank you.
And I ate way too much of that. I actually gained 12 pounds in 6 days.
Wow,
so there you go.
Gosh.
And I will be talking about Portland food on next week's show. So that brings us to you, Cynthia.
Okay. You've been listening to Animal Voices Radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Please join us next week, that's June 7th, where we'll be featuring an interview with Kathy Stevens of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, in which she'll be talking about the stories shared in her newly updated book, Animal Camp, Reflections of a Decade of Love, Hope, and Veganism at Catskill Animal Sanctuary. We also have a Recommendations for Compassionate Eating in Portland segment to share with you. We here at Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
We love to hear from you guys.
Yes, we do. Also, please check out our website at www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. And if you appreciate the work that we do here at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio. Because we do really donate, really rely on your donations to keep the show on air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply either call us right now at 604-684-8494 and we'll take your pledge over the phone, or you can go to coopradio.org and click on the Donate to Co-op Radio. And remember to indicate your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. If you're in Canada, your donations are tax deductible for any amount donated through Co-op Radio website and for amounts of at least $25 over the phone. We're closing the show with the dance mix version of the song Don't Kill the Animals by Leni Lovitch and Nina Hannigan. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.